And then as now, I was willing to put some questions as being operationally inaccessible, and therefore let's not argue about them. You know, the nature of mind or of consciousness and things of that sort. I would have said that they will ultimately have a chemical explanation, but our detailed knowledge is just too dim. And if you couldn't think of an experiment, I was a Popperian before Popper, as others were, then there was no point in pressing the question. The question would be meaningless unless you could frame an experimental test for it. I don't know where I got that, but it may or may not have been what people like Ernst Nagel would have taught, but it's what I extracted from my readings like that.
What about the, the taxonomic aspects of biology? Things like botany and zoology.
I thought they were pretty dull in detail, but they needed to be known if you wanted a picture of all of life. This was the way that one's image of it would be organized. I thought morphology was a pretty shallow basis for that kind of description. I wasn't thinking of DNA in those days as much as different enzyme systems, different proteins that might be expressed. I look forward to more of a chemical taxonomy coming along that might be somewhat more meaningful. But I respected it as somebody, people had to do that, and I would never have scoffed at it. I might not have thought it was my own cup of tea.
The reaction to going to a natural history collection or museum is one of going on mental overload pretty quickly in a room full of birds or a room full of insects or something of that kind.
Well, I've been to suppress detail when I can skim a book, I can skim an exhibit, and still not get turned off by it, but extract what there could be of interest. And, I would visit the American Museum of Natural History quite often and enjoy those displays without feeling drowned by them.
What about some of the other cultural aspects of New York? I mean, it's all around you here, but were your circumstances such to allow you to do more than just visit the museums that were free, or?
No, it was not. I might have gone to theater once in my young lifetime. There were movies. I don't think I ever visited the opera during my first residence in New York. There were financially inaccessible, if nothing else. And I wasn't that interested. I did play around the Metropolitan Museum. In those days, kids were allowed to walk into the Egyptian tombs and things.
Oh, really?
That sort. Oh, yes. It was great fun. And I enjoyed that a lot.
And, I can imagine.
So, little story, I wish I could document it more clearly, but this was in high school, but pretty early. A friend of mine and I got interested in hypnosis, and we wanted to experiment with it. We managed to nab a subject, and boy, were we treading on thin ice, but he felt very, very guilty about masturbation, and so we said, well, we'll see if we can help you with that. You'll be our subject. We didn't intend to do anything to hurt him, but my God, what an IRB would think of that kind of involvement. Oh, I don't know, 14 maybe at the time. This kid was probably 15 or 16. It was Puerto Rican. I think he was at the same junior high school that we'd been. Maybe was still in junior high. And but we'd read about hypnosis, post-hypnotic suggestion, all the rest of it in the books. And we sort of went through the drill. And we did managed, it's a very willing, very suggestible subject, to do this, and we got to where, as I remember, the code was sleep, and he would just go right under. We had him conditioned to do that. So we'd read something about, I don't know what books we were looking into, about regression under hypnosis, and so we just thought we'd explore this a little bit. We got the shock of our lives. We asked him to think back when he was an infant, gave appropriate responses, and what was he before that, and what was he before that, and said, well, okay, were you ever reincarnated? And he said, of course. I said, well, let's go back. What are you now? And so before long, he was a scarab in Egypt, and we were asking him to describe his environment, and he was a kid who was barely literate, and he started writing out hieroglyphics. I've never been so astonished in my life. I can't give credit to this idea, but how in the world am I going to account for this phenomenon? So we got a couple of pages of this kind of stuff, and we're trying to figure out, well, could we translate it? Could we figure it out? What would be the provenience of all this? When he was awake, he confessed no knowledge of anything about it, and believe me, you would have been startled to think that you'd ever heard of a hieroglyphic. So, finally managed to get to see one of the Egyptologists at the museum. And I don't know if we told him what we're up to or not, but we just asked him, can you date this material? Can you identify it? He looked at it for a while, and he said, well, this looks like some of the popularizations of Champollion's work. Of the mid-19th century. There were mistakes in it. They were not completely accurately rendered, and that's how he was able to tag them. He wasn't able to point to a book that this was copied out of. He said it was of that genre. Well, to this day, I can't imagine where this kid had ever picked that up. It's a totally unresolved mystery. We were pretty scared when he first started producing it. I mean, we just didn't know what genie we'd let have in the bottle.
Almost a traditional speaking in tongues kind of thing.
Yeah.
In written form.
But it's also told me to just never underestimate anybody's intellectual potential. It can be overlain with all kinds of things. And if you only get to the root of it, you could get all kinds of fantastic productions. I have no idea what's happened since, and I don't know if we cured him of his habit or I'm not even sure what our view on the matter was, but anyhow, there we are.
Did you try any more hypnotic experiments after that?
No.
I'm amazed how easy it was for you to do that.
Well, he was pretty suggestible, and we were pretty confident.
Good combination.
And I have no doubt about the authenticity of it. I mean, there was no way he could have faked it. He went through a lot of the routines, including suppressing pain reflexes, and he would stick pins into them and so on, and a few post-hypnotic things. We did nothing cruel. I mean, we were not malicious. Anyway. Could have been careless.
So your life was pretty much concentrated on your own self-study. Your activities, there was nothing in athletics. Is there any interest in athletics?
My mother would chase me out of the house every now and then and said, Joshy, you really got to go out and play. You can't stay indoors all the time. And occasionally do it. Might get into some gang or other that would allow me to join in. But I guess our main sport would be stickball. We live in a very good location for that. We live right off a cul-de-sac, so there was no traffic coming in and out. And I enjoy going through the woods and looking at the natural history of what was there. I remember bringing home a praying mantis and putting it in a bottle and keeping it as a little pet for a while. Parents were somewhat horrified. It's a very formidable looking creature, you know. There was a swimming pool up at Highbridge Park in the summertime. It was a great thing to go to, the public pool. I was more likely to be at the library than any other place. And it was pretty well stocked. I've been there since. It's nothing like it used to be in terms of just the range of texts, the range of specialized material. Well, they had Budansky there. That's where I heard about it.
Was that the first... I wanted to ask you that. Because Budansky mentions other books that you mentioned also, and I'm wondering if that was your first exposure to that. Is that the one that got you started?
So what is it you just said?
In Budansky's introduction, he mentions other books that you have said were very influential early on as well. And I'm wondering if Budansky was the one who got you started in that sequence.
I remember that. I'll have to look at the introduction to see. It wouldn't be unreasonable. There was a... You know, I thought he had written on physiological chemistry. If there was such a thing as pathological chemistry, I thought that would be really exciting. There's just not very much available there. There is a text by Wells called that, but it's, in practice, it's quite disappointing.
Maybe that would refresh my memory, though. By the time I was in high school, I had,
well, that's the time we're talking about here. So since the time I got the book, I can't quote which ones, but I certainly would have looked up some of the articles he had in footnotes if there were things I was especially interested in. I don't recall which ones they would have been, although the Our Captain Urias story would be a good candidate. But these, I wasn't reading German, and so many of these are in German. Yeah, H.G. Wells, it's a different one than the science fiction writer, Chemical Pathology. I do remember looking that up.
Okay.
And this is under Errors of Metabolism, so I was imbued with that quite young.
You would receive, how old would you have been when you got your copy?
Well, I got my own copy when I was 13. I was already very familiar with it, but it was a bar mitzvah present. It's dated May 31st, 1938. This introduction soon. The reference to Needham would have excited me. I know I've read that, but that was in college, very likely. E.B. Wilson, Physical Basis of Life, Solid Chemistry, all those were all very familiar. I probably did look into those. Chambers, The Nature of the Living Cell, Revealed by Micromanipulation. I attend a lecture Chambers gave. And that had to have been about 36. And a friend of mine, who's a little older than me, tells me he's 5, 6 years older than me, that he'd been there too, and there was this young kid who got up and asked what he thought was a very penetrating question. That was me. I was 11. About the reality of spindle fibers. So I must have already been reading about that.
And that is cross-referenced here, so that could have been a lead. Just as likely, I just go down the library shelves and that section. I just look at every book on the shelf and kind of pick out things I thought I could understand. So.
We talked last time about you got another Bridge dictionary at the New York Post office.
New York Post.
Oh, the New York Post. Oh, all right. I'm sorry.
It was an advertisement that you bring in the coupon and get it for a dollar or something like that. So I'm taking the trip down there, and the east side is just off the east side highway here. And getting it and bringing it home, that was one of my books. I don't have that one anymore. But it had etymology in it, and I tried to teach myself Greek and Latin roots by just compiling the roots of a lot of the words that I looked up there, write my own concordance out of that. That's what I use some of it. I remember now, these big rolls of paper for.
At the same time, you missed a word at the spelling bee at Radio City. Did you consider yourself a good speller?
Well, I was the champion in my school, and so they had this competition, and I won a chance to be on the radio, and and I was struck out. The announcer, clearly here it said emollient, and I was a little bit torn. I knew the word emollient, but he was pronouncing another word, and I spelled it with a U, and I was struck out. I looked up in the dictionary, there was no word with a U, I had no case.
And there, that same year, your father took you to Washington.
Yeah.
Palestine conference.
I guess that must have been when I graduated junior high. I remember that as that was my first visit to Washington. I quite recently ran into my autograph book from public school, which sort of doubled for that, and that had a little record. It had some signatures of some of his colleagues down there, so that's what pinned that date down for me. And I began to recall the event. That's very pathognomic, too.
You recall anything specific? I mean, the situation in Europe was certainly deteriorating by this time. And, did you attend any of the conference, or were you just there?
I don't think so. I think I just toured the sites in the city. I was deeply impressed. You know, Lincoln Memorial, Washington Memorial, that wonderful clean marble, and the sense of power that there was in the White House, things of that sort.
Oh. It was all right, but it was, and I didn't realize you'd been a member of the Boy Scouts either.
Yeah, locally.
That thought was the thing to do in those days.
There was one organized at the local Y, and it was a social activity, and there were skills to learn and so on. I got to the natural history and did a few hikes and learned about knots and some things of that sort. I didn't stay in it too long, but it was in there. I made second class scout, I guess. Some people criticize it for being militaristic. I didn't see it that way at all. But,
struck by your pile of New York Times, because there's a note here that you start dating New York Times.
You're absolutely right. Well, I clean out every couple of months. I didn't do that at home. I just felt that it was history going by, and how could you sort of let it go? And thoroughly ingested it, wanted to read things that might have been a week or a month, or, you know, just maybe I want to see it again. Mm-hmm. And sometimes did. I was thrilled to learn that there were archives and libraries that you could get them, and I subsequently was very disappointed that hard copy old newspapers don't exist anymore. And that's a bitter blow. They used to have a rag paper edition that I would consult in the Cooper Union Library. I don't know if I mentioned this before, but I felt I ought to know something about World War I, which I just read a little bit about, so I just scanned the New York Times for the entire war, just to get some sense of what it was like to flip through it. That had to have been when I was in high school. That's when the Cooper Union is a couple of blocks away.
You've already talked about TMV, and it was the New York Times, and I've forgotten what year that was.
Wendell's Family, 1935.
35, that's much earlier. So were you trying to also watch, instead of, in addition to the political scene, watch the scientific scene? Was this one way of getting up to date on...
Well, the Times certainly included stories like that, but I didn't leave it at that. I didn't expect that to be my primary source of information, but there was something I think was called Scientific Monthly. Mm-hmm. I suspect that was where I got it, the library or whatever. That's probably the thing I read regularly. I didn't read science yet as a routine, but that's probably the one.
Nature?
No, that's when I got to college, yes, but I mean, not as a way of keeping up with current. That would have been the journal I would have consulted regularly for current developments. There was one other one, Science Digest, or Watson was the editor. I can recall too. It would have been in the library at Stuyvesant. I would have gone for that. I doubt if Science or Nature would be there. Scientific American. There was, kind of recall the format. It didn't look quite like what it does today, but it covered somewhat similar kind of ground. But the Sunday Times used to have a regular science feature. I remember that. So that was, there was more there then than there was for a long time thereafter. It would have been the weekly equivalent of the Tuesday issues that they've had more recently.
Well, we talked briefly. I was a little curious through your high school career. In fact, you note here, your yearbook said CCNY biochemist.
Yeah.
But by this time, you were already doing work in cytochemistry and histology and
mm-hmm.
so on. And I wanted to talk a little bit more about that.
Well, I still saw it as a branch of biochemistry, but I didn't know that biochemists mostly did other things than that. it's not illegitimate. Just cytochemistry would not have been mainstream for most biochemists. If I'd known better, I would have said cytochemist.
How were you
how comfortable did you feel with what, how you were envisioning the work you were doing and what was happening in the larger world, so to speak? You say you've been, you were keeping up with it to a certain extent. Did you feel that you were ready to make some original contributions at any point?
Well, the larger world you just referred to is the political scene, and I felt utterly powerless personally to do anything in that sphere. I thought if one could marshal enough intelligence, one might be able to figure out what to do better, but I didn't feel very comfortable about my own world scheme and so on. I mean, it wasn't until the 60s that I felt well enough educated politically to be able to put in my own two cents in any reasoned way, with, you know, other than parrot what other people might have said. Scientifically, no, I thought it would be quite a while before I would be making original contributions. I didn't thought that the quest was important, learning how to do investigations. One would come across interesting problems and then something would emerge, but I certainly, in high school, I didn't expect it in high school, I didn't expect it in college, I would be making significant contributions. I did not accurately predict the future in that regard.